everyone. I'm Brandon Odo.
And I'm Brian Bowling.
And this is Critical Care Scenarios, the podcast where we use clinical cases, narrative storytelling, and expert guests to unpack how critical care is practiced in the real world. Hey, everyone. It's Brandon. Welcome back to another Turbo. We have kind of a meta topic today. We get questions occasionally about how we produce the podcast, just on the practical side, from people who have some interest in content production or who are just curious. So I just thought I'd kind of rattle through our process, the equipment we use, how we get from A to Z. And, you know, this is not going to interest three quarters of you, but for those who want to know, here it is. So we typically plan our topics in advance. We have some kind of a big bucket of ideas. We look at what's interesting, or even just ideas for guests, and then sometimes even they suggest topics. Usually we have some idea. We reach out to people that we think we want to bring on. You know, we usually do guests on the cases, and now usually on lightning rounds as well. We use a scheduling app. We used to use Doodle, and then they added some restrictions for the non-paid version that made it kind of untenable, so we're using Calendly now. We schedule people sometimes well in advance. And then we record with them typically using Riverside. One of the kind of priorities for our recording to get good quality is not to record an audio stream. We do all of our recording virtually. We've only done one or two live recordings with people. So using something like Zoom, if you record it, you're just recording the digital stream, which has been compressed and processed and filtered. And it's never good quality. It always sounds like somebody is on the telephone. Plus you're at the whims of the internet connection. So if there's any blips or bobs, you lose people. And you usually end up recording, everything in one stream. We want to record everyone's audio locally on their own machine, so it doesn't have to get transmitted. And ideally in separate streams, so they all end up in different tracks that I can easily edit without people kind of talking at the same time. I can adjust the timings and stuff. So we used to each record our own audio and then ask guests to record theirs, which could sometimes be challenging if that was not something they were familiar with. We had to walk them through using some kind of an audio app. It just added a whole nother level. So what we use now is Riverside, which I've been very happy with. It's intended for podcasts. It's a web-based app, and it just functions like a service like Zoom, but it allows for audio and, if you want, video, and it records people, but it automatically does local recordings. So it just looks like a stream, but it's recording everyone on their own machine, and then once you're done, it uploads all the files to their server, and you can just pull them down. Much, much easier for guests. And I mean, easy for us too. All the files are in one place. When we're done, we just pull them off and it's no sweat. It is a paid service, but we find it worth it. So, that's that. On my end, I record, let's see. So my mic is Electrovoice RE20, not 320. That's a different one. It's an old mic. I mean, a lot of the classic microphones are relatively old technology. The kind of higher end of the podcasting space, everyone, it seems like, has gone to the SM7B, the Shure SM7B. If you've seen any videos of people podcasting or often on YouTube, it's those kind of thick, stubby ones. Those are fine. But what I found early on was that my voice tends to have a lot of low notes. And the SM7B is a very low kind of dark mic. And of course you can play with the sound later. But my challenge for a lot of our first few years was getting sound for me that wasn't just nice sounding, because you think that a low voice sounds pleasant. And I mean, in some ways it can be, but a lot of the actual content is in the higher registers. The articulation is on the higher side. And when you don't have a lot of that, I get kind of hard to hear. Like if you're in a noisier space, like a car, or a lot of audio systems really boost the bass because it's for music. And it gets really kind of too much low end. So this mic is a little more balanced. It does the highs a little better. And the quality is just generally good. Not a cheap mic. I started out with, when we first started, I was using the Blue Snowball, which was very budget. I had that from before. And then both Brian and I were using the Blue Yeti, which is very commonly seen from podcasters and YouTubers and such. It's that kind of R2-D2 looking one. It's okay. We found there's kind of only one way to use it to get good audio. It's a very sensitive condenser mic, so it picks up everything that happens anywhere around you. So we would turn the gain all the way down, and you got to get right up in it, just a couple inches away from it, and then it can sound okay. So it's all right, but I mean, honestly, for the price, you can get better mics, I think. So I upgraded from there to a Rode Procaster, which I found to be a good mic. It's a dynamic, like the Selectra Voice, so it does a much better job of excluding other sounds around you, if you're not in like a studio, which of course I'm not. But it had that kind of low-end issue. It never quite had the articulation on the high end that I wanted, so that's how I ended up with this one. I keep it on a boom arm. That I find that much more convenient than trying to put it on some kind of a stand, which is what I had for the Blue Yeti. This is the Rode PSA-1 boom, I think, which I think is excellent. It's very quiet. It doesn't transmit much noise. It stays exactly where you put it, and you can just park your mic exactly in the right spot. It goes to a shock mount I cannot remember the name of, but you know, this mic has some shock isolation, I think, in it, but I was having an issue early on where there was some little hum being transmitted through the boom from my desk, and this took that out. This is a XLR mic, so it has to go into an interface to get to your computer. So I put it through a Rode AI-1. And what I like about the AI-1 is that it has excellent quality pickups. So the amps are really very low noise. There's no like humming or hissing or anything in the background. And it transmits really good sound. But it's affordable. It's, I don't know, a little bit over $100. Which is good for this quality of amp. And the reason that it is that cheap is just because it only has a single interface. You can only plug one mic into this. So a lot of people want more plugins, at least two, or a lot of them have four, so you could have multiple mics. But because it's really just me here, you can sort of save money by not having that. It's just a kind of bare bones interface otherwise. But it's good. I've had some issues with it lately that I've been kind of working on, but the company has pretty good service and for the most part has been helpful. I was using a FET head between my mic and the interface, which is an inline mic booster, which essentially gives you additional gain with very little noise. So usually to kind of boost to high enough levels, you end up turning a lot of these interfaces up higher and higher, and then you end up with a little more noise in the background. So these inline boosters are meant to, the sole purpose is to give you extremely quiet additional gain. It's important for some interfaces that don't have enough overall power, like the SM7B is a really kind of gain hungry mic, and some interfaces you can turn them all the way up and they're still not loud enough, so you need them for things like that, and also for some cheaper interfaces where they tend to be louder, so they have more noise. As you turn them up to a reasonable level, you have more kind of background just hum or hiss, so then if you add some quiet gain for something like this, it helps. Honestly, this interface is quiet enough, it's not really necessary. I thought that it added just a little bit of kind of quieter gain. But honestly, I was having some issues with it lately, so I've taken it off, and I think that's fine too. Not really needed. That goes into my computer, which I had an iMac for a long time. Recently, Brian and I are doing some other things to be disclosed soon, some video projects, and I wasn't having enough power, so I have a Mac Studio now, which is working well. And then I do the editing in Logic. We started out with GarageBand, which is the free Mac app, and that was okay, but it definitely has some limitations, and some of them are fairly basic. Like, you can't even really create a real audio chain of plugins and some other things. So what we were doing was using GarageBand, not doing much editing just for content, and then I would put the file through Auphonic. It's a website, still up out there. And you just upload your file, and it does processing for you. And you can kind of select what you want, but it can do some filtering for noise, compression, it can normalize it for the overall levels. It's good. I think the results are good, and it's free up to a certain amount of usage. But at a certain point, I want some more customization, and particularly I wanted just to cut that step out of the process, just to streamline. So we went to Logic, which you have to pay for, but unlike a lot of apps now, it's not a subscription. You can just pay once and be done, which is what we did. Logic is a full-featured digital audio workstation. You can make music and stuff, so why don't use a lot of the features? But what I do is I do a lot of cutting for like blips in content. So someone coughed or sneezed, there was just a pause of a couple seconds longer than we wanted, or people were talking over each other a little, and by and large, I clean that up. And because all of the audio files are on their own tracks, it's easy to move things around. I mean, a lot of it is pretty seamless. You probably don't even realize some of the edits that have been made. There's sometimes whole sections that have been cut out and things like this. And for the most part, I think it can be done pretty seamlessly because everything's on separate tracks and, you know, with a little bit of fading and things. So that's the kind of primary editing that gets done. What I usually will do is put everyone's voice through a kind of simple audio chain. If there's noise, which is never really for me or Brian because we have reasonably good setups, but usually for guests, like a background hum, I have the only plugin that I paid for, everything else is built into Logic, is Clarity VX. It costs a little bit, but it's just for removing exactly that background artifact. It's pretty good. Even a fair amount of noise it can remove. At the higher levels of reduction, you get a little bit of a weird sound, but it's better than the alternative. From there, I go into a noise gate, which I keep pretty light. I found that when it was more aggressive, you can tell it's there. And it's just, when you're being aggressive, I was using it for the other issue, which is things like background noise. And it's just not really a good solution for that because it'll turn off whenever somebody talks and then that sound is there again. And it turns on when they're quiet, but you can hear it coming in and out. So it's better for just like to kind of keep any little like taps or ticks in the background gone, and I keep it pretty light. I put it into an EQ then, which for a lot of us is just it's a high and low end filter. I'm pretty gentle with it. For me and Brian, we don't need much with the mics we have now. They're pretty flat in the middle. If I feel like I have that same problem, a little bit too much bass and not enough articulation, I'll take a little bit out of my low end and add a little bit in the high end. But it often depends, honestly, how close I am to the mic and things like that. Brian doesn't need much of anything. I give him just a bit of bass because I should say, so his setup, his mic is the Rode Pod mic, which I think is an excellent buy. If anyone's looking to get a really nice quality sound, XLR mic for a very, very reasonable price. It's like a little more than $100. Then you get an interface like this. And I think it sounds as good as some of the best mics, maybe with a touch of EQ. Anyway, it's a great mic, but it is more of a trebly mic and his voice is too. So I give him a little bit of bass sometimes, and that's about all that it needs. And then I put everyone through a compressor, which again, depends on who it is for what, how much we need it. Brian speaks quite evenly, so he really doesn't need much at all. I usually do because I have a lot of highs and lows. I do a lot of yelling or a lot of just like peaks, like kind of popping in and out. And then I mumble. So I'll have like a whole stretch where I'm kind of quite low. So the compressor brings those two together, the highs down and the lows up. So I'm able to basically not have low periods where you can't hear me. And yet my highs not have them so loud that they're clipping. My thresholds are usually between negative 10 and 20 and a ratio of around 3 or so, but I'll adjust based on the material. And then the guests often need compression as well, because usually whatever they're recording on tends to be, on the hotter, louder side. So just to kind of, bring everything kind of a little more squished down usually helps. That's pretty much it. I use a loudness plugin and a gain to kind of boost things up to the overall levels I want. I try to normalize to about negative 16 lufs, which is kind of in that ballpark of the usual standards for things like podcasts. I just kind of do that by eye. I wish there was a tool that that could do this effectively and bring us all to the same level, because it can be. I mean, I'll do all this sometimes, and then I'll kind of test listen. I often do this in my car when I have a commute and stuff. Get things to a good spot and then just play it later. And I'll be like, oh wow, like I'm clearly louder than Brian, or the guest is quieter or whatever. I know that there have been plugins that do this. I never found a good one that was effective and was cheap or free. Anyway, so that is that. Once the file's done, I just export to an MP3. Oh, so intro and outro music. They're from a royalty-free like audio clip website, Jamendo. Yep, Jamendo? Jamendo. They just have a lot of little clips of music and stuff. And a lot of services that provide those are on subscription models. You pay them every month or something, and you can use whatever you want. But we don't add additional content. It's just the stock in and out. So the royalty-free model, you pay them for those files, and then you can use them as much as you want forever, basically. So that's what we did with those. We export, and then I host my own stuff, not on my own computer, but I have just a paid host that I use for most. I have several websites, and I host them all on the same service. And that's what we do with the podcast site, too. There were some security issues, so we had to break a couple things into other hosts at one point. But it's still kind of all through me. We use WordPress for the blog backend, and then a WordPress plugin called PowerPress, which just is really seamless. You just put the link to the podcast file in the WordPress post, and then when it posts, it automatically distributes to the RSS feed and stuff. So you don't need to pay another service to handle the podcast distribution or anything. It just gets handled through there. And I think works well. I like PowerPress. What else? I think that's it. I have some headphones here I use for just monitoring while we record. What are these? Metzas 99, I think. They're not really like studio headphones, so they're probably not as like flat and unaltering as they could be. But most of my editing, honestly, I just use my speakers, which also are not really studio monitors. What are these? These are Edifiers. They're just kind of a reasonable middle end like bookshelf speakers. Again, they could probably be more perfect for audio work, but it's what I have. And then my studio space at home is just our spare room, my office. And the one thing I've done here that I think is important is I've treated it for sound a little bit. A real sound treatment, which is basically putting stuff in to reduce reverb so that when you talk or make sound, it doesn't echo as much from the walls. Because that creates that kind of boomy, echoey sound in your recordings. It's not soundproofing, that's keeping external sound out, and that's a whole other thing. But you can buy sound treatments, but they can be very expensive for the effective ones. You see like kind of cheap little like thin foam things with triangles and stuff you can get on Amazon. Those probably do very little, if anything. You need some real mass to absorb sound, especially lower end, bassy kind of stuff, which is often what you really want to get rid of. So I made my own. I'm a little bit of a woodworker, so I just made some wooden frames. And I put in, what do they call it? It's Rockwell Safe and Sound. It's insulation material, but it's intended for sound insulation like this. So it's kind of tuned to absorb sound waves well. I think it absorbs, it's like fire resistant as well, which is not relevant for me. But so we just stack it in these thick frames, or 6 inches thick each, which I think is like two layers of this stuff. And I have three of these panels around the room, and they're also held off the wall on some little kind of risers. So the air gap between those and the wall kind of, in a sense, adds more damping as well. So it's like a foot overall, which I was lucky I had enough room for. But with three of those, and there's also a small futon in this office and a little bit of carpet, and I usually close the blinds to cover the window, I've been happy with the sound. Again, early on, I was kind of annoyed at the amount of reverb I would have, and I would have issues like if I wasn't right up in my mic, then there was too much when I got further away, because the further you are from your mic, the more noise you have for the signal you're giving it. But when I was really close, I would be more bassy and I would have those problems I described. So treating the room helped well. Could it be even better treated? I'm sure you could keep adding stuff, but I'm happy with this setup here. And that's that. So that's kind of our deal here. We're far from experts, but we've gotten to a point that we're happy with it. As I said, now we're exploring some video stuff, which is a whole nother realm for us to learn. But that's our deal. So feel free to ask any questions. If anyone is thinking of doing something similar or just curious, just reach out. I'll tell you what I know, which is not much. Otherwise, I'll talk to you next time.